Well, how many of you are familiar with Newton's laws of motion? Yeah, you guys didn't know you were going to get a physics lesson on Easter, especially from someone who is completely unqualified to teach anything about physics. But even if you've never taken a physics class or had to memorize them, you're familiar with the basics. For instance, the first law of motion says that an object at rest tends to stay at rest unless it's acted on by a force to outside to get it moving. That is what is known as the law of inertia. And if you were here for breakfast this morning, some of you might not be able to articulate it, but you are experiencing the law of inertia right now, I'm sure. And you're probably wondering what any of that has to do with Easter or any of the what we're talking about. Well, it does. Because even though the events that we're celebrating and that we remember today happened, 1,700 years before Isaac Newton ever stepped foot on the earth or formulated those laws, they weren't new, and they weren't really all that complicated. In fact, the two ladies that we're going to read about here in a moment who go to the tomb that day, even though they might not have known what to call it, they understood the law of inertia. They knew that when they got there, that big stone that had been rolled in front of the tomb was probably still going to be there because it was going to require some outside force because it probably had a tendency to stay at rest unless some outside force acted upon it. And whether or not that question even entered into their minds, if it did, it was nothing more than a hypothetical question. It soon went from hypothetical to practical because indeed, when they got there, some outside force had acted upon that stone and rolled it out of the way. But who or what? Now, I'm not going to spoil it for you because I want to read for you what Matthew has to say about this event. And so we're going to be looking at Matthew chapter 28. If you have your Bibles, if not, we'll have it up on the screen here. But if you are willing and able this morning, would you stand with me in honor of the reading of the Word of God? This is Matthew's account of the resurrection. Matthew 28, beginning at verse 1. Early on Sunday morning, as the new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went out to visit the tomb. Suddenly there was a great earthquake, for an angel of the Lord came down from heaven, rolled aside the stone, and sat on it. His face shone like lightning, and his clothing was white as snow. The guards shook with fear when they saw him, and they fell into a dead faint. Then the angel spoke to the women. "Don't be afraid," he said. "I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come see where his body was lying. And now, go quickly and tell his disciples that he has risen from the dead and he is going ahead of you into Galilee. You will see him there. Remember what I have told you." As if they're going to forget that message. The women ran quickly from the tomb. They were very frightened, but also filled with great joy, and they rushed to give the disciples the angel's message. As they went, Jesus met them and greeted them. And they ran to him, grasped his feet, and worshipped him. Then Jesus said to them, "Don't be afraid. Go tell my brothers to leave for Galilee, and they will see me there." This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, if you didn't catch it, Matthew gives us the answer to that question as he tells us that an angel came down from heaven, that was the outside force, and rolled that stone away and then proceeded to plop down on it like it was a park bench. And we get pictures of angels in our heads, these nice, you know, gentle kind of fluttery things. No, this angel, don't get that image out of your head. This was not some gentle and meek angel. It was frightening. In fact, so much so that it scared the Roman guards, who were the best and the bravest in the known world, so bad, Matthew tells us, they fell into a dead faint. And the women, might have likely followed suit had that angel, that same angel, not taken pains to comfort them right away. And that's where we hear those famous words that he utters, that really, they're words that bring us here today, they're words that still echo today. Don't be afraid. He isn't here. I know who you're looking for. He's not here. He's risen from the dead, just like he said he was going to. It's a familiar story to us. It's familiar words to us. He is risen. Oh, you missed it. Yeah, thanks, John. You got it. And this is a familiar story. I mean, we read it. If we don't read it every year, we at least read one of the four versions of the resurrection every year. But as I'm, for some reason in my life, discovering when I read familiar texts, especially recently, I'm seeing things that I didn't quite catch before. This one in particular, that there was a few details that I caught that are unique to Matthew that we don't find in the other Gospels. For instance, there's the angel, which Mark and Luke also include an account of an angel, but they don't tell us that it was the angel that rolled the stone away. Then there are the guards collapsing and fainting. That almost seems like a funny detail that Matthew liked to add in there. Luke and John and Mark, they don't tell us that part of the story. And then there's verse 2, the earthquake. Matthew's the only one that mentions the earthquake at the tomb. And Matthew tells us that it happened when the angel came down from heaven. But that surely can't be the only reason there was an earthquake. I mean, you can read all through Scripture, all through the Old and New Testament, angels pop in and out of the picture all the time. And we never with an earthquake happening. Luke has angels all over the place in the early parts of his gospel. I mean, they're appearing to shepherds, to wise men, to Joseph and Elizabeth and all everybody. But we never hear about an earthquake. In fact, I could be wrong, but I can't think of and couldn't really find any other major incident in the Bible that directly associates an earthquake with an angel descending from heaven or showing up. And on top of that, this actually is not the only earthquake that Matthew tells us about. Because in the chapter before, in chapter 27, he tells us that the earth shook when Jesus took his last breath, which you could argue was a moment that was absent of angels. And though Matthew does kind of structure it and it does kind of look like, and I'm trying not to be contrarian to the gospel writer. Yeah, that would be bold. Even though it does appear that he structures this in a way that makes it look like it was the angel's descent that caused the earthquake, I suspect that it was something far greater and more significant that caused that quake. I think that the seismic shock that happened that Easter morning was the result of the future colliding with the past. It was a collision of time and space and eternity and life and death and all of those things that came together on that first Easter morning and caused the earth to shake. We'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. But the two Marys who go to the tomb that day, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary, at this point, they're both terrified and overjoyed at what they've experienced, which I can imagine. They probably don't know what they're feeling at this point. And so Matthew just says they're feeling, yes, that's what they're feeling. They're completely scared to death and they're overjoyed at what this might mean. And so they start to head back to wherever it was that they came from, which was probably Galilee. We don't know for sure. And as they head down the road, they are greeted by none other than the risen Christ himself. And he tells them the exact same thing that the angel tells them. Well, he doesn't have to tell them that he's risen. They can see that. But he says, don't be afraid. Those first words, don't be afraid. Go to Galilee. Tell my disciples to go tell my disciples to go to Galilee and they will meet me there. End scene for Matthew. Which is an interesting place for that to end, because we really don't hear much about what happens after that. John tells a very similar story without a few of the details that Matthew includes. One thing that he does let us in on is what happens after after these women go tell the disciples what they've just witnessed. John tells us that Peter and another disciple, who it is believed to be John himself, just by the way he tended to refer to himself in the gospel, race to the tomb, and they find it, surprise, just the way the women described it, empty. And then they go back home. Now, I'm not lessening the story there. You can go read John 20:10. It says, "Then they went back home." Kind of reminds me of the two disciples that Jesus encounters on the road to Emmaus in Luke. You know, Jesus shows up, walks along. They don't recognize him, obviously, and they're telling him the story. You know, the women told us that Jesus had, rose from the dead. But we had dinner plans in Emmaus, and we can't cancel our reservations. So, you know, hey, what are we going to do, right? I mean, come on. Guy comes back to life from the dead. And not only that, he stops to talk to you as you're walking along, even though, we'll cut him some slack, they didn't notice who he was, they didn't recognize him, and you can't cancel your lunch plans. Now, before I go any further on this, I want to make something very clear about this Jesus that all of these people encounter, and what I believe about this Jesus. This was not a spirit. This was not a figment of their imagination. I believe, I would not be standing here saying what I'm saying right now if I didn't believe this. I believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus from the dead on that first Easter morning. Call me crazy, but I believe that the man who encountered all of those people in the closing chapters of the gospel, in the early verses of Acts, it's the bodily resurrected Jesus that they had just seen die on a Roman cross 3 days earlier. That belief is foundational to my faith. It's foundational to classic Orthodox historic Christianity. Now there are some who would like to explain it away and say that the disciples, well, they shared some sort of mystical experience, you know, in their grief, and it was a product of their collective grief, almost as if they got together and just said, okay, guys, let's all close our eyes and just believe really hard that Jesus is still here. Got it? Okay, now let's go tell everybody that we've seen him. And then if they try to kill us, we're just going to let them kill us. You know, newsflash. If you don't know much about the disciples, just let me tell you this. They weren't that bold, at least on their own, and they weren't that creative. These were not the best and brightest minds. And I'm not being cruel to the disciples. You just read the Gospels. and I'm not leaving us out of the equation, because they were people just like us. They wouldn't have been able to come up with something that kind of crazy. And they did not have it in their minds to even come up with an idea to make up the idea of a bodily resurrection of Jesus. Resurrection was not a popular concept. There were people that believed that resurrection was coming for everybody in the future, but not some random guy in the middle of history. It wasn't going to happen. You don't get that out of the mind of somebody like Simon Peter. And we can tell that because they're the sort of people who can see an empty tomb and then just go back home. They were people just like us. Ordinary people who thought ordinary thoughts. And since the resurrection is what, I mean, really, that's, you may not know this, but that's why you're here today. If Jesus wasn't risen from the dead, we would have had nothing to invite you to. So that's why you're here. And since we're here about the resurrection, it makes sense to talk about that on Resurrection Day. So let's talk about that for a minute. Like I said, you know, people tend to, we tend to want to either, if we're not going to try to explain it away, we at least try to explain the resurrection. Some people would say that Jesus was not really dead, that he was just in a deep coma, which is the technical term for that is the swoon theory, which has been proven false time and time again. If Jesus was in a coma, he would not have looked, he would not have been in as good a shape as he was when they encountered him. And besides, that's more like resuscitation, which we can explain. I mean, medical science can bring somebody whose heart stopped back to life. I mean, that's something that, and I'm thankful for that, but that's something that, but we're not talking about that. This is resurrection. And you can't explain a resurrection. And one of the reasons we struggle with it so much is because we live in a world that doesn't tend to want to believe in things that it can't explain, even though it will come up with all sorts of crazy ideas and explanations for things that don't make sense. We don't want to, we have a hard time believing in things we can't explain. It's understandable. And besides, we know the way the world works. We know that everything that lives ultimately dies for good. It's just face facts. It might be morbid to think about, but that's our world. What dies stays that way. And there are very rarely any surprises to that. That's our world. But here's the thing about Easter. Easter has nothing to do with the way that we think the world should work. In fact, it literally has nothing to do with the way that we think the world should work. It's not about the resuscitation of a dead body. It's not about some divine spark that lived on in the minds and hearts of the disciples after Jesus was gone. It's about God. And not God as some sweet, distant kind of grandfather-like idea that's out there in the sky somewhere, or some inner experience, but a God who is near, a God who took on flesh, lived among us, walked among us, who created a way where there was no way, who made war on evil until evil was destroyed, who resurrects a dead Jesus just to show us who's in charge, and defeats death in the process. That's what Easter is about. Now, I don't know this for sure, but I think that angel, that Easter earthquake angel, sitting on the rock was the same angel that shook Joseph awake in the middle of the night to tell him that his fiance was pregnant with the Son of God. God did on Easter what he did on Christmas. He made a way where there was no way. He took charge. And maybe, just maybe, the same angel who was blessed and privileged to go to Joseph and tell him, you are to name him Emmanuel, which means God with us, was the same angel that encountered those two Marys at the empty tomb and said, don't be afraid, he's not here, he's risen. He was telling them that God is with us, using a little bit different language. God with us grew up, he was crucified, he made the earth shake, and he walked out of the grave bringing a whole new reality with him. The earth shook. You don't explain that. The disciples certainly couldn't explain it, but it could definitely explain the disciples and what we see happen in them afterwards. And I think that's why Christ appeared to them first. They were the ones that had heard him teach. They'd seen him heal all of his miracles. They'd watched him as he loved the poor and served the poor. They watched him as he was arrested by the soldiers. They'd watched him as he was tried and then crucified on a Roman cross. They, of all people, should have been the first ones to recognize that this risen Lord was none other than the crucified Jesus. And his crucifixion, just so you understand this, his crucifixion was not an accident. Rome didn't crucify people because of an unfortunate mistake they made in the Roman legal system. Crucifixion was the inevitable, it was a predictable result of saying the types of things that Jesus said, doing the types of things that Jesus did, and being the kind of king that Jesus claimed to be. And it's what the world always does to people who threaten its power. But even beyond that, it was also the inevitable plan of the Father to use the worst that the evil one could dish out and use that as the means of rescue. On Easter, God turned everything on its head. He turned the cross into the means of triumph. He took the worst we could do, and he turned it into life and freedom and hope and peace and joy and love. And the earth shook. It's interesting to read the different gospel accounts from the writers, because for Luke, Easter is, for Luke and John, Easter's a little gentler. For Luke, Easter was a meal on Sunday evening with the risen Christ. For John, Easter was the resurrected Jesus encountering Mary Magdalene in the garden. For Matthew, Easter is an earthquake with doors shaken off of tombs and dead people walking in the streets. A stone rolled away with an angel sitting on it. And another earthquake. For Matthew, when death and life collided on that first Easter, the earth shook. And the thing about it is, it still does. I like to think that God sent that earthquake that day not just as an incidental thing that happened when the angel popped out of nowhere. I like to think that he sent the earthquake that day to shake off all of the old stuff to make way for the new. Future hope came crashing in to meet the death and the brokenness of the past, and the earth shook. The forgiveness and healing that were so desperately needed collided with the chains that had held humanity for far too long, and the earth shook. Jesus shook off the old world and the old life and came to bring us a brand new one. He came back looking for his disciples. Think about this. He came back looking for his disciples who were the very ones that had abandoned him, not to carry out vengeance, but to forgive them. Because as it turns out, this new world that he came to bring is about forgiveness and not vengeance or condemnation. And the earth shook. He picked up a piece of bread and he ate it. This was after. And you could see the wounds in his hands and his feet and his side. Because as it turns out, this new world that he came to bring is about life and not about death. And the earth shook. When that stone was rolled away and the earth shook, we got our first glimpse of a new world, where death doesn't have the last word, where sin no longer reigns, where injustice is made right by a powerful yet merciful and gracious God. It's interesting to think about the two women that went to the tomb that day. If you were going to send anybody to be eyewitnesses to an event, especially in that day, it would not have been women. But that's just how it happened. Again, God using the most unlikely. But I imagine they went to the tomb that day, imagining that they were just about to write another chapter in the same old world, the long, sad story, the same old world that they'd always known. One where sin and death reigned. It was just one more example of the way the world worked. Even the good ones die in the end. And then the earth shook. And an angel appeared, and a stone was rolled away. You realize Jesus was already gone by that point. The angel didn't roll the stone away to let Jesus out. He was gone. A stone was rolled away, and Roman soldiers lost their nerves and consciousness. And then that angel plopped himself down on the stone, and he said to the women, "Don't be afraid. He isn't here. He is risen. Just as he said he would. He's risen with new life. Oh, and by the way, he wants to meet you guys in Galilee." That first Easter earthquake was a sign that the world as we know it was passing away, and that a new world was coming, and we still feel the tremors today. Again, that's why we're here. The resurrection is not just a historical fact. We believe it to be that, but it is a present reality and a future hope. It's a sign of the power of God to bring life out of death. It's a sign that we too can experience the same new life that Jesus walked out of that tomb experiencing. It's not just a nice theological concept, but an earth-shaking event that has real-world and eternal implications. It's a sign of the power of God to transform, not just the power of God, but the willingness of God, the desire of God to transform lives and to bring hope and healing to a broken world. And so my question for us today is this. Just like that Easter morning 2,000 years ago, when God sent an earthquake to shake the old off to make way for the new, what old thing in your life does Easter need to shake off for God to do something new? What dead thing in your life needs to be resurrected? Well, maybe not even resurrected. But what dead thing needs to be shaken off by God this Easter to bring new life? What do you need to let Easter shake this morning? Bow your heads with me.